now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard. Today, our very special guest is Logan. Logan has had a number of military abduction experiences, ET experiences, and he's also one of those people that has the ability at times to access other realities, alternate realities, other dimensions, if you will, other timelines. And we've had some interesting email correspondence, interesting discussions. And so without any further ado, Logan, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Logan, first of all, sit rep from your perspective. You're in a different part of Australia than I'm at, but what we see here is in my part of Australia, we have a ban, no more than 100 people in any indoor establishment. Well, that's actually countrywide. And also countrywide, there's a ban on any outdoor gatherings of 500 or more people. So automatically, that's going to wipe out a lot of the outdoor activities, a lot of the sporting events, a lot of the farmers markets, and what have you. From your perspective and your part of Australia, what are you seeing? And what's your take on the pulse of the situation of the people? How are the people behaving around you?
Obviously this would be Australia-wide, but it's going crazy. I mean, people have bought into it hook, line, and sinker. You know, you got everyone scared for the slightest things. You know, like going to the shops now is a bit crazy, you know, as it's been. You know, it's exactly probably what was intended. That's what I see. You know, I see that, you know, everyone is putting all their trust in probably all the wrong places at the moment. And, you know, everyone's bought in, as far as what I can see, vast majorities of people, you know, as what I've been reading too. I mean, I've been keeping up just regular, you know, Facebook posts and trying to gauge where people's heads are at. And not many are questioning the origins. Not many are questioning just how bad it really is. No one's looking between, you know, seeming to look between the lines of actually where this is actually intending to head. Because at least in my mind, this isn't the be-all, end-all. It was never about this alone. And even the talk of actually restricting movements, even that to me doesn't go far enough. This, it's a symptom, you know, it's a symptom of something much larger. And particularly seeing that it's gone much further than the Ebola scare and all these other previous things, you know, bird flu. Nothing really went to this level to shut everything down the world over. I'm getting emails from even the US just saying, you know, from bookshops, you know, saying, well, we're closed down now until the end of the month, you know, because we're not going to take the risk to go in, you know. And I thought, wow, this has really hit everywhere. In places that, you know, to me, it's silly, you know. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it's exactly what was intended. It's the fears everywhere. And to me, that does hit something that I've come to more recently too, you know, because I was coming to the conclusion myself that this has largely been cultivated with a fear-based frequency that's been put out. And, you know, I just thought I would check, you know, what's out there? You know, I just thought, you know, is there something that can confirm or deny what I've been feeling on that? So I just had a quick look, general Google search, and I found nearly straight away, infrasonic frequencies. And these things, like this is a frequency that they found back in World War One days. Apparently, you know, this is how old, you know. So they found this guy had found back in, you know, World War One days that a very specific frequency band, which, you know, I wrote down here, but it was 16 hertz to around about 20 hertz. And apparently when this is put out, you know, it has a range of symptoms. You know, this is where I feel this actually ties in with the corona and everything else, and actually broad reaching even beyond all that. Apparently this frequency is also naturally occurring. You know, like natural earthquakes and volcanoes and all that sort of activity can actually generate it naturally anyway. Animals can naturally generate it, apparently. So, you know,
certain cryptids can too. Certain Sasquatch and certain, it seems, I think certain dogmen can emit a certain frequency that will just freeze you in place.
Yeah. It sounds like, from what I've been reading on it, it's got a double-edged function. You know, it can be to induce fear. It can be to induce disorientation, nausea, all these things, you know, like, you know, all the things that people sort of would tie into an illness, a sickness, you know. So, but it can also affect things like navigation in animals, you know. So this, to me, this is where it ties into a much broader area than what I think people are looking at as well. So when it can actually affect things like navigation, and then you know, how animals probably behave with each other, even, you know. So when they're pumping this frequency out, if it's actually been an amped up one, you know, that they're putting out artificially, it's not just what it's doing to us, you know. And I feel this is actually where this relates even to when we've seen a die-off of bats and all this sort of stuff during the heat waves and all this sort of stuff, you know. So, you know, their navigation's off, you know, and this, to me, this ties into many, many things. You know, this would be whales beaching themselves and all this stuff, you know, all this stuff where animals rely on for migration, you know, birds to migrate elsewhere. You know, this is relied on, you know, in a natural sense, that aspect of it, you know, the aspect where it is actually beneficial to the animal. So you can see on that side of things that it's disrupted a hell of a lot. And this could explain a lot, you know, when people just go, why the hell have we got this whale? It's just beached itself. Oh, it's probably just because the, you know, rising oceans and, you know, or lower tides, and they got themselves beached. Oh, poor animal, you know, poor thing. It goes beyond that. I'm pretty sure it goes beyond that. You know, so I think we're seeing the effect in both ways, you know, not just to ourselves, but to the animals also. The thing with this frequency band too, it's also put out, this is where I found this quite interesting. I found a page, which I can send a link to. This was actually a generic link, you know, it wasn't even anything that anyone could say is a conspiracy-based link or anything like this. It was quite factual, you know, and you can verify it and look it up for yourself. Point by point, random facts about this frequency, but this frequency is also put out by wind turbines.
Yes, the alternative to fossil fuels, the alternative
exactly
to coal,
right.
coal-burning electrical power plants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then apparently you got all the birds flying into them and all sorts of stuff, and people that live nearby, you know, they're getting symptoms, they can't sleep, and they, you know, and it does that too, incidentally. It does affect sleep. It does actually do all of these things. It does cause nausea. It does affect so many things, you know, which to me links into so many other things, you know. So this is where I feel like, you know, that sort of thing brings your natural defenses down. So I would say even the average person that would be probably quite aware of themselves, you know, if, you know, to varying degrees. And then you got this sort of thing affecting your sleep. So in a very logical sense, you know, it's having an effect on your body, but it's also affecting your mind too. And then in turn, you know, almost a bit of a side effect or a very intended one, I'd say it makes you very susceptible too, very suggestible. Because what they were suggesting too is, you know, this is what happens when you have poor sleep. You know, they link this to actually being in almost like a trance-like state, you know, almost like the sort of state that you could be in when you're hypnotized. So then, you know, you get saturated with all sorts of subliminals and, you know, everywhere, you know, like this is where, you know, as you would know, as most people are starting to realize a bit to varying degrees again, you know, any TV show, any set of music, especially depending on actually what frequency that's at, you know, sets you up, you know, gets your mind in a certain direction. So to me, you know, all of this just branches out in so many areas, but that to me disturbed me a bit to sort of think that if that's putting your defenses down while you sleep, what are you dreaming? And is it actually you that's dreaming it? And this is where it ties into what I've noticed lately too, where I've noticed a lot of dreams that to me, they are artificial. They don't come from me. I can tell, you know, once upon a time, I mean, just to give a bit of background how I came to understand this, but dreams to me, you know, and for most people would be the very conventional sense, you know, that you can analyze them. They're, you know, they might be wish fulfillment based, you know, the things that you want, the things that maybe stressed you out during the day, all this very, very matter of fact stuff. You know, this is the way maybe I would approach maybe the first level of conventional dreaming for a lot of people. You know, it'd be just very, very functional. You know, the mind's just purging its daily stuff, all the rest of it. But to me, that's a beginning stage. I believe just like spirituality itself, you know, it evolves. You know, you come to a different understanding. Well, I do think that's reflected as well in your dreamscape. So what I feel like is in the beginning days, you know, your dreams might be very ordinary, very, you know, analyzable. You know, you can pick up a dream book, you know, see the symbols. Oh, that's what it means. You know, it's, I hate my boss. You know, I hate my job. I want to leave. You know, that sort of thing. You know, very, very conventional initially, you know. But then I feel at least my theory on this is, and I could be wrong, but just put it out there anyway, is that the conscious mind and the subconscious mind for most people are separated, you know, and this is what most people would say, left brain, right brain, we're operating, you know, in a bit of a split mind, you know, capacity. So I would say that in the dream sense, this is what we're seeing too. So I would say that when we dream, say, the very ordinary dreams, that's your very left brain stuff coming out, you know, but your subconscious is still there, but it's not really, you know, expressing itself so vividly or anything like this. So it's in the background, right? And every now and again, you might have some weird dream and you think, what the hell was that? You know, and that's it trying to put its thing out there. But I think they're not integrated initially. So I believe that, you know, before you do some sort of actually conscious work, maybe to sort of, to deal with maybe some of the very daily stuff, you know, the traumas, this, that, you're going to keep operating probably in a dream sense, the very left brain stuff, you know, until you do something about all that. And conversely, I'd say with the subconscious, it works in a very similar way. You know, if that's where your head's been at most of the time, you're going to have all these, you know, quite surreal dreams and but they're not going to really go anywhere. You know, it might be just this sort of thing that you might have little glimpses of lucid dreaming or something that basically hints to more. All right, but you don't know what to do with it, you know, because again, you haven't integrated much. You haven't done, you know, maybe the average person might not have actually done the integration. You know, that's what I would sort of suggest. You know, so it's not that people don't work in themselves. Yes, people do. You know, people do go to spiritual courses. They do read books. They do all sorts of things. But how much of it's actually tying you together? You know, how much of it's actually looking at you as the whole of who you are? You know, rather than just, well, I am this. I am the conscious mind. This is who I am. The subconscious mind is you know, barely there. So I might as well not look at it. Or the opposite way around. Well, you know, I've got this very highly evolved sense of self, but the conscious mind doesn't play any role. You know what I mean? So it's this thing in my mind that a lot of integration work in that way hasn't been done. So the dreams themselves that people experience remain very surface level for the most part. But what I feel is when you've done that, you know, when maybe, and this is what I can reflect upon myself, when I did this for myself, I went through the very like exploration based stuff when it came to the subconscious. And this is where I feel it deepened it. So I did some of the very conscious stuff first. Okay, this is what I'm dreaming. This is what I'm analyzing. That carried me a certain way until it couldn't anymore. And then I started to do the subconscious stuff, you know, and started to really try and look into more into lucid dreaming and try and honing that more, you know, because I had a bit of that when I was young, you know. It's quite funny actually, because, you know, it was actually the movie Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, that actually really helped me, you know, back in the day, you know, because it was one of them, might have been number 4, I think it was, but, you know, Dream Warriors or something like that, you know, and it was actually one that was suggesting that the main character got to be quite good at lucid dreaming, you know, and, you know, and going back into your nightmares and facing them and doing all this stuff. So very conscious work, you know, and reflecting back now, I mean, I watched that as a teenager, you know, and I can look back now and think, damn, that was good. You know, that's actually really good advice, you know, coming from a horror movie back then, you know, a throwaway horror movie that most people just sort of forget about. Ah, well, that's '90s. That's whatever. But it was good advice and it stuck with me. And I did actually try to do that. And that's actually where, as a teenager, it worked. I was able to re-enter my dreams and, you know, go back into the same one sometimes, you know, and give it an ending, you know, and bring it to a conclusion sometimes where it didn't have one before, you know, and especially with ones that were reoccurring, you know, and they had no ending and they weren't going to probably, you know, they were just there to mess with me, you know. So it did work, you know. That was the beginnings, I think, of actually the lucidity, you know, when I actually began to be able to do it very consciously, to be able to go very directly into a specific dream, change it, you know, and you know, come across some dream figure and actually confront them and actually equip myself and you know, all this sort of stuff, you know. So that's to me, that was the beginnings then. And then later on, I delved more into it. So it became this thing anyway, that the subconscious stuff, you know, the more I dreamt it, the more actually I became more lucid with that sort of thing. It took a new level again. You know, this is why I believe it is this progression. You know, if you work at something, it will keep deepening, you know. And that's what I noticed with the subconscious stuff, you know. It was no longer even the beginnings of a lucid dream, you know, when they say, oh, just have fun with it, you know, create a world, you know, do this and do that. I did that, you know, you've been there, done that, you know, it was fun. You sort of think, yeah, okay, you know, I'm my own little god here, I can do whatever I want. But then, you know, it got boring, you know, so then you sort of feel like, well, I don't need to be here anymore. I don't need to do that anymore. And then it was almost after that that they took a new spin again, you know, and then the dreams that I started to dream, they became way more vivid, you know, like the recall that I was having was so clear, you know, before it was so patchy, you know, like most people would say, they might have remembered one scene, you know, one one image, one this, one that, you know, just something that really stuck with them or really terrified them or this or that. But bit by bit, the recall was clear, you know, and then what I started to find is this is actually something that initially sort of freaked me out a bit, but the lines between awake, you know, and the dreams were starting to blur a bit, you know, so I started to actually have waking experiences that to me, you know, the waking life started to look like dreams. You know, the clarity, they started to look, the dreams started to look clearer than actual waking life was. And to me, that's where it started to put, you know, plant a few little seeds, you know, and started to have me wondering, well, you know, a couple of years ago, exactly that. Well, just how real is it then? How real is what am I, that I'm seeing, you know, when I'm awake? How much of that is actually being influenced, you know, in some way, you know? Just the same way that I can actually control my dream and I can be lucid and I can be my own master. Well, who's to say someone's not doing this, you know, and influencing our reality of what we're seeing, what we're experiencing, what we perceive, what we hear, you know, if it's a proved thing that our eyes are only sort of like interpreting information, you know? And so this is why I started to wonder, well, you know, am I really seeing everything as clearly as I'm meant to be seeing it? And then, like I said, then the dreams altogether were taking on this crystal clear, like almost like they would say, like, you know, HD, you know, when it comes to movies and all this sort of stuff, you know, the HD technology. The dreams were like that. You know, they were so more real than real, you know, sort of thing, you know, so the colors more vibrant, everything almost seeming more real than some of the colors you'd see when you'd be awake, you know, it almost would feel like you were impaired, you know, like you were still not perceiving something, you know, about what you were seeing when you were awake, not to the clarity maybe you were meant to or whatever. So then just to sort of try and tie it up a bit more, you know, what I started to find is the dreams took on a whole different meaning. So they were no longer dreams I could analyze anymore. So my favorite dream book, I'd sort of put that away, you know, because they were not behaving in any sort of definable pattern anymore. You know, I couldn't find meanings anymore. And the thing was, I didn't need them because at the same time too, they weren't so cryptic anymore. And that's where I feel they started to shift, you know, because they were becoming more literal, you know, that they weren't symbolic anymore. They weren't outlandish things that I was seeing, you know, I wasn't seeing weird things that just didn't fit, you know. It's, you know, like people would say, you know, I see a creature, I see a dog walking on two legs, you know, something weird that makes them think, oh, hang on, that was a dream. It has to be a dream because it was weird. Whatever, you know, but they were starting to take on very literal meanings, you know, and then I started to write these down. You know, I kept a diary now the last few years, you know, so probably the last, now it's probably getting on nearly 10 years. I've kept a diary, you know, every night, you know, and it's almost like the more interest I took in it, the more I was able to see and the more I was able to remember and the more I was able to write. So initially, I think I started out, I was writing, you know, five dreams, maybe, you know, in good detail, you know, pretty good detail, you know, and then it just upped more and more and more, you know, then it got close to 10 dreams, you know, and then in good detail. But even after I'd been awake for most of the day and I could reflect on them throughout the day, you know, so it was almost like reflecting on a memory of, you know, oh, I'd gone to the shop today and then just thinking about it a bit earlier, later in the day, you know, it was like that in the dreams. So I could reflect on them, you know, well beyond what I initially could, you know. So as most people would say, you know, your mind still has it quite fresh when you first wake, you know, and that's the time to really, you know, pinpoint it, write it down, do this and do that. And I still do this, but it's more out of the habit for the habit. Yeah, exactly that. The habit, the connection part, you know, I feel more connected when I'm able to do that. you know, it sort of doesn't have me so jarred, because what I sort of started to find later on too is because the dreams were becoming so literal, you know, and so, you know, you could no longer write them off anymore, you know, and they were becoming the prophetic variety, you know, so they were ones that I was dreaming something that was at the time I didn't know was going to happen, and then later on then I saw it, you know, it happened exactly the same way, you know, like, and it was very innocent at first, you know, so at first I might have dreamt of say my very first car that I would have, and then I did actually buy that exact same car, that same color, looked exactly the same, I was on that same road, you know, when I was driving it, you know, all that sort of stuff. But later on it became more than that, you know, so again, I feel it's you open yourself up, and then, you know, depending how connected you are, you know, and how much you've integrated whatever's inside you already, you'll see more and you'll experience more. And this is what was happening. So these diaries became quite, you know, detailed, you know, over time. And I would sort of say too that, you know, in between all this, because the other experience that happened in amongst all this too is, and you know, you would be well aware of this, and I did discuss this before, and you know, Eve's work covers all this, Eve Lorgan's, but the love bite scenario that happened in amongst all this as well. And in between all of this, you know, I'd had some experiences of seeing, you know, multiple UFOs, like, you know, daily sometimes. I went to the UK. This is how this ties into the love bite scenario. The person that I was with, you know, they were from the UK. I spent time there. And aside from the rest of it, which I can, you know, as most people can say in retrospect with the love bite scenario, that, you know, yeah, it can be quite painful, you know, and you know, you'd want to avoid parts of it, but it is what it is. The bit that I would never change is what I saw, you know, what I saw while I was there. You know, it was as though, again, same thing, you know, it came at around about the time that all this stuff was opening up, and then, you know, whatever ETs, you know, or, you know, whoever they were, you know, that they were making themselves present to, for me to see, you know, night after night when I was there. And the same thing, I was keeping a diary, so I was keeping track of actually how many that I would see, what colors that would change.
What part of the UK was that? What part of the UK was that?
Oh, sorry, yeah. This was the Midlands, the East Midlands, I think it was. So, yeah, and yeah, this, but every night, what I know is that they had Air Force bases nearby too, you know, but what I would see, I mean, this is just a little throw-in comment that I can say in there too, but what I would see is night after night, you know, same times that I would document, I would see them flying in formation all the time, you know, and consistently, you know, and the only thing, I kept trying to take photos, and you know, but the photos would never, because it was so dark, you know, I could never take anything that would actually, you know, really, you know, still hold up on camera, even though the digital camera. I tried video cameraing the footage, you know, and then it's this vague, you know, dark footage, so still wasn't anything I could really do much with. When I tried to show the love bite ex, you know, at the time, you know, she would come out, you know, I'd pull her out, come quick, you know, have a look, you know, that I can see these UFOs, they're right there. She'd come out and they're gone, you know. It was always these scenarios day after day, and I just thought, wow, this is weird, this is just something for me to see, you know, like, didn't want her to see it. And had no problem with me seeing it, you know, and these displays that I would see, you know, like sometimes they got more and more elaborate, and, you know, and each and every night that I would see them, you know, there'd be the Air Force jets, you know, trying to follow. I always see this. It was always quite funny, you know, try and keep up, could never do it, you know, then they'd break off, you know, any pursuit, you know, and it was always quite amusing to see it, but they kept trying. You know, I kept seeing it night after night that they'd keep trying to follow him every time. They kept seeing him. And then the interesting part at the time too was I actually did speak to a local guy that lived there who was actually an ex Air Force guy. He said that was nothing unusual. He said, you know, matter-of-factly, you know, I mean, I didn't know the guy that well, but he quite openly said to me, oh, yeah, that's common. Yeah, every night, you know, they try and follow. You know, there's nothing crazy sounding about it. You know, it's quite openly spoken of, you know, at least amongst, you know, themselves, you know, the staff. And I thought, wow, that's mind-blowing, you know. So then I came back to so-called reality already with that, you know, with that knowledge, you know. And, you know, but all of this sort of seemed to progress, you know. So then it wasn't just what I physically saw, but I was dreaming, you know, more ET-related stuff too. And they started taking different forms again. So it was, again, sightings and landings and you know, different areas of, you know, I would always be there when they would, again, be flying over or when they would land or something else. But I would always see it in the dream again, just as I sort of did. I didn't actually see a landing as such in person, but I did see enough to know that they were not planes. Not at all, you know.
In some of these dreams, in some of these dreams, did the ETs present themselves to you? If so, how do they appear to you?
Early on, it was all more that I was seeing craft. Early on, I did not really see much of actual ETs, but admittedly so. This is something to sort of for me to throw in there too. You know, when I was a kid, you know, so I was always into all the weirder stuff, you know, so, you know, spirits and again, UFOs and aliens and all this sort of stuff. You know, right from when I was quite young, you know, like I had my first UFO book, I think, when I was about 8 or 9, or, you know, it's quite cool, you know, so I had all this documented stuff in there and just sparked knowledge. But where I was dreaming back then, you know, in those days, you know, and I did see then, I was, you know, when I was a kid, then I was taken aboard ships, you know, and then I was seeing landings, and then you know, in my backyard, I was seeing it, you know, and them, you know, coming to me through the window and, you know, bedroom window and all this sort of stuff. So I was seeing that then. And it's almost as I got older, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's, you know, you try and make sense of it. You try to maybe explain it away and think, oh, maybe that's just because of all the movies I've seen, whatever it was. But I know as a kid, I wasn't seeing that many to have actually sparked any of that. But so back in those days when I was younger, yes, I was seeing ETs, but it was more vague. And this is back when I was a kid, so a lot of it was kept a bit more deliberately vague. You know, that's the thing. All I would know is that, at least as a kid, I was quite scared, you know, so the feeling was still quite fresh, even if I couldn't actually picture what I saw, what would come for me, you know, that sort of thing. So I could not remember clearly what I saw as a kid, you know, but then again, this is, you know, if I'm 7, 8, 9, you know, whatever it is, then, you know, I'm not going to have that as clearly anyway. But so, yeah, so to answer your question, back in those days, I'm quite certain I did then, you know, from early age. Lessened as I got older, lessened as I got to be a teenage, you know, and all this sort of stuff, you know. So or either that or I just wasn't remembering it. Either way, but nothing that conscious. And then later on, as I got to dream more of it, initially it was more of the craft, and then later it started to be more of the what I saw, the creatures, you know, the creatures themselves, the ETs. That came more as I would say the MyLab experience started more up. So as I started to have these, you know, and I started having them fairly early on too, you know, I'd probably say you know, the beginnings. You know, I know in retrospect, you know, I didn't know anything about nearly any of this, you know. So again, I know that I didn't influence much of this based on readings or anything else or movies or especially my lab stuff. You know, I didn't even know the term until recent years, you know, and then it just made me rethink everything, you know. But I did initially have, you know, like a lot of the training experiences and memories and all this sort of stuff, but I wasn't quite an adult at that point, you know, but they were spaced out, and then I'd just written it off as, again, as movies or anything else, you know, until they became more detailed, just as I said. So as the lucidity and everything else opened up more, then more recall, more detail, more of everything. So then mission related things started to become more apparent, you know, and I started seeing myself undertaking all these, you know. I know we've spoken about this, you know, and I'll reiterate some of it again, but these missions, you know, that initially they could be anywhere, you know, that they could have been you know, in the middle of a zombie outbreak, which I had so often. I mean, this is the thing. And initially,
me too.
Yeah. And you know, and a lot of times, you know, especially those ones, you know, there were these scenarios that always played out the same way, that all the group that I went in there with, you know, they all get picked off, and then it's just down to pretty much me. And then it's just to see how I can survive it, knowing that everyone else, you know, got picked off in some, in my mind, a silly way. You know, maybe they didn't sort of, you know, like barricade a door, you know, as strongly as they should have, or they didn't, you know, conserve their ammunition or something else, you know, that at least in the dream made perfect sense to me, you know. And, you know, and then they'd get picked off, and then it would be just me. And then I'd always be thrown into this scenario pretty much like that. I would always start out again and again and again like this little small team, you know, with or without me being in charge. But later on, you know, it was more me doing the directing and actually, you know, trying to give the orders and trying to keep us all alive. And, you know, as it went on, in that regard, I did actually see that they, you know, it did get better, you know. So it's almost as though, you know, the survival rate of the other people I was with did get better. You know, I remember dreaming dreams that, you know, yes, we made it. You know, yes, we made it through the night, you know, when it didn't look like we would. You know, yes, we managed to defend the position we were in. You know, yes, we didn't get overrun. You know, this sort of thing. But, so, yeah, so these missions like that, you know, were occurring more. But to me, they started out very much like that, you know, very terrestrial, but to me, you know, still very, you know, bit off, you know. So it was that, and then it's vampires and all this other stuff, and I'd sort of think, wow, that's am I really dreaming all this, you know, and coming up against demons and all this other stuff, you know.
Yeah, and what I wanted to ask you, just to hold that thought for a moment, but
yeah,
because you developed over time this ability to lucid dream, and you're able to not only analyze the dreams, but direct the flow of the dreams, and you got the sense of immediacy, you got the sense of, for all intents and purposes, at this time in space, time, wherever I may be, this is real, right? When did it start for you to go from, okay, I'm having lucid dreams, to now they're becoming more operational? And you also pointed out in discussions we've had, and it's entirely optional whether you want to even talk in generalities about this corporation that you were involved in. Because what's interesting, folks, is this corporation that he was involved in a MyLab, he worked with them during the day. And then, I don't know, I can't remember if he did shift work or not. But also,
Yeah, I did.
So, but what also happened was in your quote-unquote dream life, you also dreamed about them. But then this segued into an alternate reality scenario where you were lucid in alternate realities, but it also involved at least perhaps a counterpart of this corporation. Mm-hmm. And there was some kind of interplay between the two. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I would say it was more of an overlap. It probably happened, I would say, almost at
that's the word
time.
I was looking for, an overlap, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So pretty much at the same time. So while the lucidity increased, the missions increased, more opened up, and then it was that. Yes, then this workplace that I was at, probably now, yeah, it, 15 years ago, you know, quite a while ago now, I was dreaming nightly. And initially, I sort of thought, again, it was maybe just this very conscious thing, this thing of like, oh, I'm glad I'm not there anymore, you know, hated the place, you know, this sort of thing. But it persisted well after. And even when there would be no logic behind it, there's no reason for me to keep dreaming about the place, you know, then it started to take, like you said, these memories as if I was still there. So it was as though I never quit. I would see myself there. The base would look very similar, slightly different, but I'm still me, you know, I've still got conscious knowledge of myself, you know. But even as time went on, even that started to shift a bit. This is where it, you know, leads on to what you were saying, you know, that maybe, you know, my appearance was just that slight bit different. I was still me, but something was a little bit different every time in some way. You know, it's either my personality was different, my appearance was that slight bit different, the location of the base was that bit different, but a lot of the times I was still there. And sometimes the location wasn't even in the same country. It was a different country, you know, and but the same company, but for some reason in that dream, and what I came to sort of realize later on, in that reality, they'd branched out overseas. So they had a base overseas, and I remember I was actually applying for a position there overseas, you know, because I wanted to work at that site.
And if it's okay to mention it, can we refer generically to this corporation as kind of a defense contractor, kind of?
Yeah. And yeah, so it didn't have those links. Yeah.
And when you were in these so-called dream scenarios, and you would notice that sometimes things were a little different, a little out of kilter, but the place you were at had its own internal logic. Were there times, and it may have varied at times, where you were almost an autopilot from the standpoint that perhaps you had kind of merged in a way with whoever your counterpart was, your alternate reality counterpart was in that reality, but there was still an element of you at some conscious level that said, okay, I'm here, I'm kind of him now, and I'm just going to go with the flow and watch it develop. And conversely, were there other times when when you had more kind of a you in the driver's seat? Okay, well, I guess I'm him or in his body, but I can kind of like explore and do a little bit intel gathering, you know, for my own reasons, you know, back on this.
Yeah. No, that's exactly, you got it pretty spot on. And I know we've spoken about this, but yeah. Yes, it was both, you know, so initially, probably more to, it felt very strategic, at least in my mind, to keep my head down, play along, but very quietly observe what I was seeing, you know, take note of it in knowledge of what I know when I'm awake here, what I remember from my waking life here, you know, and how it compares. So I did it very quietly. You know, I didn't raise any attention to anything. How come? What? That's there. That wasn't there before. You know, that sort of thing. I never did anything that would draw attention, you know. So I did play along, you know. And then just keep that knowledge very quiet, write it down when I'd wake up. But, yeah, definitely. It was always this thing of how does this place compare? What's different about it? You know, so I was always trying to see what was different, and probably the more significant ones, and there was quite a few of these that happened in a succession, you know, and I would probably say some of them were probably continuations of the same location. Other ones were probably very similar ones, but elsewhere. But the bases were underground. Massive complexes that at least in my waking life here, I never saw it here. I never saw of anything, not to say, you know, even that chance doesn't exist, that it doesn't really exist. I would not know, you know, because at least, you know, like any sort of military or you know, defense, you know, it's need to know, you know, I wasn't exactly that high up in the chain to know, you know, so I, at least clearance wise for myself, you know, I was still privy to, documentation that was still higher up on the chain, you know, so I wasn't exactly like a lowly clerk or anything like that. But at the same time too, you know, I wasn't getting to see the real inner runnings of anything either, you know, so there's a very real chance that even what I saw in the dreams could have actually existed here, you know, in this reality. I would not know. But at least what I saw in the dreams, what I was privy to there, massive, massive bases. You know, the only thing I can probably liken it to be was, you know, the movie Resident Evil, you know, when they, you know, they show this underground complex and it just spans, you know, like whole city blocks and all this sort of stuff. This massive area underground, even though above ground it was quite small. This is the feeling that I had when I was there. It was like that. So this underground part of it was just seemed to just keep going on and on and on, you know. And but the feeling I had was the above ground wasn't. It was nowhere near as big as what I saw underground, you know. But underground, at least what I saw in some of these bases, though, really decked out in this. You know, I couldn't really describe sometimes, you know, I'd never seen anything like this, you know, so, you know, but it was made for live, you know, like they actually portrayed it in Resident Evil, probably would have been the closest, you know, where they portrayed that families lived there, everyone lived there, you know, so it wasn't just the staff, it was actually, you know, wives, husbands, children, you know, so there were, you know, like shops, you know, there were cafes, there were running tracks, you know, there were meditation areas, there was everything, you know, there was, I just remembered all this thinking, wow, you know, so like whole shopping centers, you know, full of everything that you would see and probably bigger than what at least I would see locally, you know.
This has been described by people that have worked in underground bases. If memory serves, even Bob Lazar talked about this. Well, they had underground shops and they had parks and baseball fields and indoor swimming pools.
I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. And some of my experiences and memories in underground bases, I happened to gain access to one way or the other, extremely plush, like suites. You know, richly decorated chandeliers and really expensive furniture. And I mean, it would be like you'd walk into a penthouse suite, right? Yeah. But it was underground, right? Anyhow, we're just getting started here. There's been a fascinating discussion with a good buddy of mine, Logan. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll have Logan's email contact address if you want to get a hold of him. We're just getting started because he's got so much more information to share. This is James Bartley along with Logan. You've been watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. And if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.